Hi, this is Dave, and it's been 3 years since we launched Galactic Netcasts. And over that time, some shows have come and gone, but the one thing that stayed the same is our commitment to you, the best listeners on the internet. And that's why we're asking for your help. For as little as $1 a month, you can help us build the best sci-fi, science, and geek culture-based podcast network in the galaxy. And all you have to do is go to patreon.com/galacticnetcasts. That's Patreon, patreon.com/galacticnetcasts. Thank you for your support, and on with the show!
We interrupt this program to give you a bulletin just received from one of our naval units at sea. A large object traveling at supersonic speed is headed over the North Atlantic toward the east coast of the United States.
This earth of yours will be reduced to a burned-out cinder.
This could be the beginning of the end for the human race. Human beings cower before the onslaught of these unearthly enemies.
Hey, it's Thursday, August 7th, 2014. What of it? And welcome to another Galactic Netcast. This is the Alien Invasion number 113 in Ottawa, Ontario, Canada. I'm Dave Nelson. Joining me, as always, for the past 112 episodes, 113 episodes, Brad Ludwig. And for a smaller number than that, Anessa Moyens. They're both in Wausau, Wisconsin. How you guys doing?
Awesome.
Getting better.
You're on the slow road to recovery.
I swear, if it's not one thing, it's another. Last week it was a stomach thing. This week it's like some sinus infection, cold thing. I don't know.
You know, the one may have affected the other. Your immune system may have been damaged, and thus opening the door to the other thing.
It's true. We did go over to a friend's house whose kid, I guess, had a cold or something, and the dad thought that he was catching it, and apparently I caught it, so apparently we were both really snotty the past week, so.
All right.
Snotfest 2014.
I have faith that you will recover and be back to your old self, Anessa.
Any day now. I'm hoping.
Brad, how you doing?
I am doing A-okay.
You're physically?
Still not done with the table.
Physically, everything's good?
Yeah, physically, everything's very well.
All right. Okay, good to hear. Let's jump into it. This is the show where we discuss all things alien. We're talking extraterrestrial, not the aliens at the border, and their appearances in film, TV, video games, comic books, science, real life. I could go on and on, but I won't. The show is divided into three sections: the news, the craft corner, that's the spotlight of an alien spacecraft that we examine, tear apart, and look at every week, and our picks for the week, which this week, by the way, is going to be one pick. We all got to see the Guardians of the Galaxy, and we're going to talk about that at the end of the show. So if you're just interested in that, go ahead and fast forward. We won't mind.
We won't hold it against you.
No.
Maybe a little.
Maybe, yeah, just a tad.
I will give lip for like 5 seconds.
You what?
5 seconds of lip.
Oh, see, you made Anessa do the lip. See what you did
okay,
there?
Okay, I'm fine now. Go ahead and skip ahead.
All right. Hey, if you want to watch us do this show live, we record every week on the Google Plus Hangouts. Just follow us on Google Plus, Twitter, or Facebook. Find our accounts there. Follow us, and we'll tweet out. We'll Facebook it. We'll Google Plus when and where the show is going to go live. And speaking of that, let's get the show on the road, and we start it every week with this.
In the news.
All right, Brad, go.
All right. I found this very interesting, and really, it shouldn't come as a shock to anybody. Star Wars expansion coming to Disney theme parks. This comes from the HuffPo. Star Wars fans have more than just a new movie to look forward to next year. Disney says it will announce major plans for more Star Wars in the company's theme parks.
Of course.
See, I'm hoping they make a Mos Eisley. Wretched. Whatever. Anyways, Bob Iger said during an earnings call just this past Tuesday that the company is developing designs for a far greater Star Wars presence in the parks. When we grow a Star Wars presence, which we will do significantly, you will see better bets being made that will pay off for us that were made in the past. Let's see.
There's got to okay. There's just speculation on my part. There's got to be a cantina in their plans, right? That's got to be part of it.
Yeah, I'm sure that the cantina would be a big thing that they would put in there.
I think people would riot if they didn't include the cantina, honestly.
They've got to have like the barge from Return of the Jedi, I think. I'm trying to think of good classic scenes. The whole set where Han Solo is put in carbonite at the end of Empire.
You could have a ride. You could have a ride where you're going through the where you're trying to destroy the Death Star, right? You're in the X-Wing fighter.
I could see that being a an experience that you would have in a virtual 360 environment.
Yep.
Absolutely. So they're looking at doing things like the Star Wars Star Tours simulation ride is in Disney's Hollywood Studios, Florida. I read that completely wrong. I apologize. Star Wars already has a significant presence in Disney parks around the world. The Star Tours simulation ride is in Disney's Hollywood Studios in Florida, Disneyland in California, Tokyo Disneyland, and Disneyland Paris. The Florida and California parks also have an interactive show called Jedi Training Academy. In addition, Disney's Hollywood Studios plays host to Star Wars Weekends, an annual event featuring shows, parades, and a massive store called Darth's Mall. I saw what you did there. Rumors of a major Star Wars expansion is, or even the creation of a Star Wars land is one or in one or more Disney parks have been a mainstay of the fan community for years, intensifying in 2012 when they acquired Lucasfilm, and they're going to be adding new films to the franchise. So that's the big news right now, is that Disney purchased Lucasfilms, and I think that once they announced that they were going to be making more movies, it was really just a matter of time before this announcement was made.
That was probably the smartest business decision anyone's ever made, ever, in the history of business, is buying the rights to Star Wars.
Having somebody with clout like Disney doing it was the smart thing. Had Lucas sold it to somebody else, maybe not so much. But if he cared so much about his baby, he wasn't going to just give it to somebody that was going to let it die. Yeah, exactly. So
yeah, two very good decisions by Disney in the last several years, buying Marvel and buying the Star Wars rights.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That gives you the ability to just print money.
Yeah, that's what they're gonna
like
do.
In the printer,
that's
just,
for sure.
Let it go.
If you listen carefully, you can hear the ka-chunk, 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 ka-chunk of the machine just printing it all out.
Pretty much.
So would this be on your plan trip to Disney World to check out some Star Wars action?
I already want to go to Disney World because I haven't been in there since I was like 5 or no, in 5th grade. That was the last time I went to Disney World. So I would like to kind of go and check it out and see how much it's changed. And if we've got time and energy, then yeah, I'd like to see some of the Star Wars stuff, but it's massive. Even with them closing down some of their miscellaneous parks, they've built a lot of other stuff in their place and whatnot, so
yeah, I've never been, so I think that would be something that would make me more interested in going. And I think that those are the people that Disney's really looking to draw in. And people that have just been, Disney's been there for a while, but now I'm grown up, I really don't have kids, I don't think that I would go. And now they've got, you could go to the cantina at Mos Eisley. I mean, that's kind of a big deal.
Yeah, that's like so many generations of Star Wars fans are satisfied by this decision that Disney's making to expand their Star Wars themes throughout their theme parks, right? Because, I mean, our childhood, growing up, I mean, Star Wars Episode 4, The New Hope, or A New Hope, you know, the cantina scene, or, you know, people that, there may be some people out there that actually might like Episode 1, 2, and 3, and there might be representations of those films, and then the new movies, too. So they're covering, they're placing their bets, they're they're doubling down on their future with the Star Wars attractions, that's for sure.
Yep.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, right. I think it's a great idea. Just, I mean, even if you look at, what is it, Universal Studios, it has the Wizarding World with Harry Potter. I mean, they get people in there of all ages, not just kids that are fans. It's like people that read the Harry Potter books in their late teens or even adulthood. So they're definitely going to be able to pull in like all sorts of age ranges with Star Wars, especially as the movies start coming out and parents are like, oh, you know, you can't watch these until you watch the first three that came out, like 5, 6, and 7, or 4, 5, and 6.
We'll skip 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah, I'm like, we'll skip 1, 2, and 3. We'll just do four. That's why I'm like, you have to see the first ones that came out, like 4, 5, and 6.
Yeah.
So, like, meh.
So, okay, let's bring it back around again to the alien aspect, because that's what we're talking about here in the show. What kind of alien creatures would you like to see walking around Disney World or Disneyland or whatever Disney thing you're going to? Like, because you got all the Disney characters, right? You got Snow White, you got Goofy and Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck, all those characters. But the Star Wars characters, the Star Wars aliens you would like to see with costumes at Disney World, who would they be?
I mean, you probably end up seeing Yoda running around.
Oh, yeah, that's a no-brainer right there.
That's a given. Actually, it'd be kind of cool to see some of the little Jawas.
Yeah, the Jawas, Ewoks, yeah. Too. A bunch of cute creatures.
Yeah, a bunch of cute creatures that aren't really going to scare kids. I mean, if you include the newer Star Wars movies, and you can get, like, the little pit droids, but I'm not quite sure how they'd pull them off. They would be the ones that you would see in the parades and the floats and stuff and, like, the puppeteers.
Jar Jar Binks?
But the pit droids were kind of cute. I don't know that they would include Jar Jar Binks. They might slap the person upside the head that suggested Jar Jar.
Or the person that actually plays Jar Jar is going to get slapped upside the head numerous times.
I know. Like, if you're going to include Jar Jar in any aspect, you would have to have some sort of interactive ride that everybody just gets their one punch in or something. Dunk Jar Jar Binks. Got some guy sitting in a Jar Jar suit over a pool, and people just start throwing their softballs at the target and try to dunk Jar Jar Binks. So.
The Jar Jar Binks dunk tank.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think that's the only way that you could really incorporate Jar Jar. Maybe if they did something along the lines of, I don't know how they were planning on doing the the tour, the virtual tour, but if they had something similar and say, like, the Haunted Mansion, where you go in the Haunted Mansion, you initially start out in like this elevator and you feel the elevator start to descend. And as you're descending, like these pictures that you see hanging on the walls, these portraits actually end up becoming taller and you see more stuff. And then you go, you sit down on this thing, like a little roller coaster type ride, and you ride around. So if they did something like that, and they would have like stormtroopers or something coming at you or appear to coming towards you, and then you would like turn and like go the other way. Maybe in the background they might include Jar Jar or something. But I think that's the only way that they can really get away with it without getting too much grief.
Yeah, I agree.
So is if he was just in the background or as part of the artwork or something on the building. If they did kind of a hieroglyph vibe, then people might be okay with it.
All right. Hey, I have a suggestion. I have a request, actually. Can we skip ahead to my story because it kind of relates to this, and then we'll swing back around to yours, Anessa?
Always skipping the story.
Sorry.
Okay.
Sorry. just because...
Not even the theme universe.
Well, no, I mean, because it has to do with a theme park. Theme park theme. It's our theme park theme.
Yep.
Alien versus Predator themed maze will be this year's Halloween Horror Nights attraction at Universal Studios theme parks. Does that mean it's going to be at more than one of theirs? Is it California and Florida? They have them in both?
You guys think so? If they said parks, then I would think they would have some aspect at both, because with Disney, they tend to have a lot of the same at the two theme parks, although there are variations from what I've heard. But yeah, I can see them kind of going for both, at least a little bit. One might have more than the other, but they don't want to completely exclude the other coast.
That's true. Yeah,
it's true.
Can't favor one over the other. What they're going to do is this is in conjunction with a couple of anniversaries. We have the 10th anniversary of the Alien, the AVP, Alien vs. Predator film, came out in 2004. It also commemorates the 35th anniversary of the original Ridley Scott classic Alien. 35 years since that sucker came out. So if you are planning a trip out to California or down to Florida, make sure that Universal Theme Parks is on your list of destinations, because it's going to be inspired by the 2004 movie, obviously. And they're actually bringing a couple of makeup artists from the film in to recreate the look of the film. Tom Woodruff is one of the guy's names, and Alec Gillis is the other. And they actually used original molds from AVP to mimic the film's look. Guests will be funneled through a replica of one of the Weyland-Yutani secret facilities where experiments on the acid blood creatures from the Aliens movie franchise have gone horribly wrong and attracted the notice of another certain intergalactic big game hunter known as the Predator. So experience Alien versus Predator at Universal Theme Parks this Halloween at the Halloween Horror Nights. It kicks off on September 19th. And my question again for you guys, would you spend the money? Would you spend the time to actually seek this out and go to it? Like plan your trip around going to experience the Alien versus Predator?
I would honestly have to live in the area to consider going. I wouldn't travel all the way out there, though, and plan everything around this. I'd have to already be out there for some reason or another and be like, oh, hey, got the extra time, got the extra cash. Yeah, let's go check it out. But it's not something that I would go out of my way to do.
But if you're hollow, if you're haunted house people, if you're the kind of person that like goes to like really world famous haunted houses, not actual houses that are haunted, but you know, the ones that they build and you can go to and pay money to go through. If you're one of those kind of people, this is it, because the what's it called again? The Halloween Horror Nights is like the most famous haunted house in the world, right? Pretty much.
I could see that, sure.
Yeah.
But I don't think that I would go. I mean, that's not my thing. I think people that are big into, you know, taking trips like that, they would do it, but not my bag.
Now, I'd rather do like a haunted ghost tour.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah. I think I'd be more apt to do something like that.
Well, the thing that I like about the ghost tours is it's not just about the ghosts, but you learn more about the area that you're in, so you're getting history as well. So it's a nice mixture, and you get to see more than just people dressed up in costumes trying to scare the shit out of you. So
they have a ghost tour in Wausau, right, Brad?
Yes.
Yeah, I kind of thought they did.
That happens around for the month of October, essentially.
Sweet, totally gonna do that.
Cool.
Yes, yeah. We are.
There's one here in Ottawa as well. So we were actually planning on going on it because it's year round. It's not just around Halloween. It's year round. We were planning on going on it a couple months ago, but something came up. So I'm thinking about bringing up the idea again around Halloween and checking it out. They actually have a drinking one where you can go. Bars are involved. Like, I think it's either haunted bars or bars along the way that you stop in for a drink, then you go to the next place.
Nice.
Okay.
Yeah.
I did a haunted tour in New Orleans, and that was a lot of fun. But they didn't include a bar, but I went to the bar afterwards that was supposedly haunted. I didn't see any ghosts.
You weren't drunk enough.
But I did get drunk. I did get schnockered, so.
Woohoo!
All right, so if you're into attractions, got a couple of good reasons to save up money for future trips to either Universal Studios theme parks or Disney World or Disney attractions to check out either of those. All right, sorry, Anessa. Third story, it's all yours. What do you got?
Not theme park related.
Shame on you.
I know. Instead, I'm going to talk about Lee Pace and those eyebrows of his and how they are going to be starring in a movie called Prisoner of War, and it's an Alien Resistance film.
Ooh.
Yep. So, on IO9, they're saying that Deadline people are reporting that Lee Pace is replacing Alex Russell of Chronicle for the lead in Prisoner of War. The film is directed by Joe Miele.
Meow.
Meow. Who we are not familiar with yet. But the premise sounds like your standard but great human versus alien premise. The story of humankind's last stand against a cataclysmic alien invasion. Set in the war-ravaged African countryside, a U.S. soldier and a French foreign aid worker team up to survive the alien onslaught. As they journey through the battlefield in search of refuge, their bond will be tested when the soldier discovers his true identity. So, actually, I don't think I saw any word as to when this would be coming out. But, yeah, they're still in the casting process, it sounds like. They haven't actually started shooting, but... it looks like already early on there's been a little bit of casting changes, and now they've got Lee Pace in the lead, and he's everywhere right now.
Yeah, we were talking about in the pre-show, not only is he in Guardians of the Galaxy, which we'll be talking about later on, but he's also in my favorite current show, Halt and Catch Fire, I was saying in our pre-show it was HBO, but I believe it's AMC. So if you like his...
I'm not entirely sure, but yeah, he's been on all sorts of things. I mean, he's been in The Hobbit the past couple of years, and he's going to be in the newest one in December, Guardians of the Galaxy. He, of course, a while back, was Pushing Daisies, which was a really great show that ended early, I think.
Yeah.
Stupid TV people canceling shows I like. But yeah, from what I can tell, they don't have any additional information about when he's going to be, or when the movie's actually going to be coming out. But Pace is going to be also starring alongside Berenice Marlowe, who starred in Skyfall. And she's going to be a French foreign aid worker, and they're going to team up in Africa and try to be a part of humankind's last stand against aliens, so should be interesting. Also, apparently he's coming, apparently he's starring in a Lance Armstrong biopic.
Weird.
Huh.
I know, I was like, I just saw Lance Armstrong, I'm like, what? So he's everywhere, even in a biopic for Lance Armstrong, so.
He's trying to make his resume a little bit more richer, a little bit more deep. Deep resume, that Lee Pace guy.
Yeah, and he's a really good actor, so it's good to see him actually succeeding and getting good gigs. So
I don't remember. Was his eyebrows noticeable in Guardians of the Galaxy? I forget.
No, because they had like the black paint like across his eyes, and then it kind of ran down, and it was around his mouth and stuff. So. His eyebrows weren't really noticeable just because of his makeup, but, I mean, in Lord of the Rings, they're noticeable, and just about every other thing, they're just like, bam, bold eyebrows.
They fit right in on that Halt and Catch Fire show because it takes place in the mid-80s, early to mid-80s, so...
It is AMC, so look that up as well.
Yeah.
So now you know, Dave. For sure, it is AMC.
All right, thank you. Cool.
You're welcome.
I was this close to picking the story. I'm glad that somebody did, because...
Yeah, because I saw it earlier, and I was like, well, I'm going to look around some more and see what else I can find, because I was thinking of using this here or for the other show, but I went with this one, and I've got another story for the other show that makes me want to watch The Fugitive.
Wait, we do another show?
Yeah, hey, we do a show called the Sci-Fi Geeks Club. Remember, Brad?
Oh, that's what that was.
And for the listeners of the alien invasion that have no idea what we're talking about, just go on your iTunes, go on your Stitcher, look up Sci-Fi Geeks Club, or go to our website, galacticnetcast.com, and click on podcast. You'll find it there. It's our other show that we do with Mr. Matt Stein and once in a while some celebrity guests. So we encourage you to, if you like this show, you'll love the Sci-Fi Geeks Club, because we get even geekier than this show.
Possibly.
All right.
There he is with his eyebrows.
Hang on. Let's see. Man. Show him again.
Okay. So it should be up there. Is it not there anymore?
No, it's there.
Okay. So basically on my screen, I have Lee Pace in his garb for Guardians of the Galaxy. And yeah, he's got black makeup all around his eyes, and then it kind of runs down, kind of makes me think of candle wax that kind of melted all the way down, and then it's along the bottom of his lower lip and chin and runs down his neck. So
his eyebrows are so big they had to paint over them.
They overflowed for this character. His eyebrows cannot be contained.
No, they can't. All right. Good stuff, Anessa. Right. Thank you very much. Let's move on to our next thing. Before we do, though, feedback, and not the annoying kind that beeps or whatever, that, you know, annoying noise. We're talking about the feedback where you tell us about something that you liked about one of our episodes or disliked or make suggestions for our show. The way that you can give us feedback is by email, galacticnetcasts@gmail.com, galacticnetcasts@gmail.com, or call our voicemail number. That's 805-328-3966, 805-328-3966, and it's time for this.
Please identify the craft you witness.
A black, triangular, three-dimensional shape, huge, just flying, hovering in it.
Shaped like almost like between an egg and like a teardrop.
Two long cylinder objects flying over me.
This had a dome. I could see documents in it.
It appeared to be rotating, and it was almost circular to disc shape, and it hovered for maybe about 5 minutes.
All right, it's time for Craft Corner, our spotlight of a certain kind of alien spacecraft, and I believe, Brad, you picked it this week?
I did. So I was actually watching something for next week's show. I have another pick that I'm just trying to get ahead on, and one of the crafts that they had on there was this one that we're going to talk about, and that's called the Ring Craft. So it's actually a craft that is shaped like a ring, kind of like a glowing hula hoop, as it were. And this information, I forgot to grab the address. It's one that we've used before. This is a rare craft, and it's also a strange one. The characteristics it exhibits are like something straight out of a sci-fi book. Normally it appears as just a ring, colors ranging from black to multicolored, size also varying in range from 20 feet to 300 feet or more. Witnesses can usually see either stars or clouds, etc., through the center of the ring, depending on when the sighting takes place. Sometimes described as having a low hum and other times as silent. However, as described in a report that I'm going to go through, one of the reports said that the craft can change shape. As to what purpose it serves or what kind of alien could inhabit this UFO, if any, is far beyond anything we can comprehend. Yeah, it's from UFORTH. Thank you. This report is the one that interested me the most. I think this is the second of two reports that it had listed that describes a sighting of this particular craft. This took place July 22nd of 2005 in Ashland, Virginia. The report says a very large black ring circle arose from a distance to one altitude and begun a steady course through the clouds. The sighting occurred while visiting King's Dominion theme park.
Theme park theme!
Yep. Hat trick. This particular witness says, my daughter and I were waiting in line for a roller coaster. Across the park, we watched a black ring rise into the clouds. It leveled off and began moving in one direction, Harry Styles. As the black ring came directly over the park, I realized that it was very large in diameter, 200 to 300 feet. We watched the object slow almost to a stop, then appear to change course and resume its previous velocity. The black ring was hollow in the center, perfectly round and perfectly shaped. There was cloud cover that afternoon, but you could see the ring moving inside the clouds. There was a lot of people watching and talking, including my wife and youngest daughter, but after we left the park, we never heard another word about it. So a very mysterious craft. When they talk about it changing shape, it will change from a circular ring to a more oblong ring. So it still keeps that ring consistency, a hollow center to it, but it will change from being completely circular to being slightly oblong.
Hmm. Interesting.
So there you go. Uforth.com is where this came from.
I forget. Did you say anything about this being a more recent type of craft that's being cited? Or is this...
They list it as a more rare craft. There aren't as many sightings, at least, that have been documented of this particular craft. So they classify it as a rare craft.
All right. Okay.
So, the one thing I was thinking about, because it mentions here, they're not even sure what kind of being could live in a craft like that. The pick that I'm going to have for next week describes aliens that are energy-based. So imagine having a very flexible ship that would be controlled or used by beings that were made out of pure energy or plasma.
That would make sense. Mm, that would make a lot of sense.
That would make sense.
Yeah. So. And you saying pure energy brought to mind that song from the 1980s.
Information Society. Yeah. I know what you're thinking.
I want to know.
Yep,
what Joe
that's
are
right.
thinking.
I'm thinking.
And that was
and that's when karaoke kicked in. You're welcome, everybody.
That was Spock, right? They sampled. No, it was I think
yeah,
they sampled.
Yeah, it was a sample from Spock.
Spock, and I believe Dr. McCoy's also in that song. And you know what? Another little piece of trivia about Information Society. They're from Minneapolis.
Yes, they are.
I had no idea.
I bought that album when it came out.
Wow.
Yeah.
We learned something new about Brad Ludwig tonight.
Yep.
That we
actually
didn't know before.
Somewhere I might still have that disc. I'm not sure.
Did you buy it because of the Star Trek drops?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. But also, it was like a different kind of music where, I enjoyed stuff where there was sampling. Yeah, I was interested in computers and... that was at the point where some slight digital stuff was being used, with synths and being able to record audio into a synthesizer. I enjoy Colorbox, but Colorbox actually, any of their sampling that they did was actually splicing it using, audio tape. They did it old school.
Wait a second, who's Colorbox? Never heard of them.
Oh, well, Colorbox is out of, they're from the UK. They actually did a couple of World Cup, at least one World Cup soccer. They did the theme song for that particular year. So,
is it Colour Box?
Yes.
Okay.
It's very very British
and very Canadian too. That's how they spell it up here as well.
Britain was around first.
I know. Okay. All right.
Hipster.
A hipster country. Speaking of that, I wonder what was the first, going back to all the reports of UFOs throughout history, what was the first shape ever reported to be seen in the sky as an extraterrestrial spacecraft? Do you think it was the round shape, the saucer shape?
I'm going with triangular.
Triangular?
I'm looking back to the Bible and Ezekiel, the wheel within a wheel.
Oh, that's right, yeah. And they just there was a story recently, and I should have found it and actually included it on the show, but they just found some other really really old cave drawings with supposed alien creatures, actual creatures themselves and their craft painted on the wall of this millions of year old painting.
Nice.
Yeah. So, you have to wonder. You have to wonder if these people were actually seeing things, because they look very much like the traditional aliens in the spacecraft. All right.
That they do.
Are you guys ready to talk about the Guardians of the Galaxy?
Hell yeah.
What is that?
Well, we're about to find out. We usually do, each of us usually has their own pick, one pick per person, but we thought, we all saw the Guardians of the Galaxy this weekend, and so let's just team up together and talk about it as our pick, and it's the perfect pick because there are a lot of aliens in this movie. In fact, it's all aliens, except for Peter Quill, who is, spoiler alert, half alien, we find out in the movie, but everybody who knows the story already knows that he's half alien, so...
That's true.
I didn't know he was half alien.
Well, you learn early on, because his mother in the hospital scene, right?
Yep.
Well,
your father, came down, he was bathed in light.
Hey, should
she could have just been crazy.
Okay, should we say at this point that if you haven't seen Guardians of the Galaxy, please turn the show off?
No, you might want to, yeah.
Okay. Because I don't feel like holding back, you know? I want to just go all out and talk about the movie in depth. Because who hasn't seen Guardians of the Galaxy yet anyways, right?
There's probably a few people.
Just a couple, but you know what? I think it's our show. We have the right to talk about it, but we just give the disclaimer and we move ahead.
Okay. All right. You've been warned.
That's right.
All right. Now they're gone. Okay. So what I wanted to do is I wanted to kind of dig into the history of the Guardians of the Galaxy a little bit with Brad and kind of discuss the origin of the series, because it originates in the comic books. Tell us who was the first, because I know for a fact that the Guardians in this movie aren't the original Guardians that were first shown in the comic books.
No. No. And I would have to dig out. Let's see, my collection is down in the basement, and I don't have any of the shelving put up yet, so I can kind of look through things. But they appeared in the Avengers. That's where I remember them from. And they were a team from the future, actually. And each of the planets in the solar system had been sort of terraformed to a certain degree, where beings lived on them, but they were they had genetically adapted to the conditions of each planet. So one of the characters was Charlie 27, and he was if I remember correctly, he was a clone, hence the name 27, or the 27 being a part of his name. And he was from Jupiter, so that intense gravity. So he was very squat, but incredibly muscular. And, you know, get him off of Jupiter's, you know, get him off of the surface of Jupiter. And he's, you know, immensely strong. So, I mean, that was each one of them used their gifts that they kind of received from living on the respective planets, and they're essentially superpowered beings.
So how did we transition from that original group to the group shown later on in the comics and eventually in this movie?
You know, that's the part I don't really know. Rocket Raccoon existed outside of the group. Groot existed outside of the group. Gamora definitely existed outside of the group. Trying to think. Drax absolutely did. Peter Quill is just a newer addition to the universe, and they kind of retcon is kind of a weird way to say it, but they basically created a new Guardians of the Galaxy, and there's air quotes there, new Guardians of the Galaxy, and they put that particular team together to make that happen.
But so. It's not new, like it's not new for the movie. I mean, those characters were around.
No, they've been around probably, well, like Gamora and Drax have existed since at least the 70s. And I think Rocket Raccoon and Groot, and this is all, I'm not using the internets right now, because it feels like cheating.
I like to do this. I like to put Brad on the spot and make him really work for his money here. So go ahead.
Yeah. I want to say, and this is off the cuff, I want to say that Groot's from the 70s. I want to say Rocket is newer, but I'm not 100%. See, now I have to go to the internet.
Okay. Okay. While you're doing that, let's, Anessa and I, being fairly newbies to this universe of characters, what did you think, Anessa, going into it not knowing much about the story?
I just was expecting a fun movie, and that's pretty much what I got. They tugged at your heartstrings early on and really, like, pulled you in with Peter Quill and his interactions with his mother and her dying, I assume, of cancer. And then suddenly you've got this kid being whisked away in a spaceship, and then fast forward to the future, and you kind of start to explain, or I guess not explain, but like understand why or who Peter Quill is and how he came to be, and I thought that was kind of cool.
There's a couple of they really focus in on a couple of things in this movie. They focus in on Peter Quill and his origin, what his motivation is, how he got to that to become one of not Guardians of the Galaxy, because they come together and form that team, but they kind of focus in on his story, and they also focus in on all the rest of the characters and what they have in common, and what they have in common, they've all been affected by Thanos, right? That's pretty much the gist of things.
Yeah, for the most part, the bulk of them have been affected by Thanos or Ronan. And Peter just wants to make a buck. Initially, I don't know. I don't remember him being affected as nearly as much as the other characters. So
it's interesting.
And
it's...
I mean, Rocket and Groot were also just kind of initially out there to make a buck, because they were after Star-Lord, because they had a bounty on him. So
well, they all had a bounty on Star-Lord, right? Except for Drax, right? Drax was just, he was in the prison and they picked him up.
Well, Gamora just, she wanted the orb.
Okay.
Her motivation was the actual orb. It's what he had. Star-Lord just wanted to sell the orb to make money. Gamora wanted the orb in order to make sure that it doesn't get into the wrong hands. And Rocket and Groot saw that Star-Lord, or Peter Quill, had a bounty on his head, and they didn't really care about what he had. They just wanted to take him in and collect that money. And once it kind of... The thing that kind of pulled them together initially was the arrangement that they had about making money. And, you know, because Gamora was like, okay, I know where we can get rid of this. I know where it's going to be safe. Let's go there. You help me do this. I give you money. And everybody was like, okay. And Drax was the only one that was like, I don't want money. I just want revenge. Like, this guy killed my wife and my kid. So he was the only one that was not about the money. And to a lesser extent, she wasn't really about the money either. It was mainly Star-Lord, Groot, and Rocket that initially started out for the money and eventually grew into wanting to genuinely save people.
Yeah, it was interesting how that transition happened over the course of the movie.
Yeah,
I did some quick research. The majority of, with the exception of Peter Quill and Groot, are all creations from the 70s. Thanos, Gamora, Drax were all created by the same person, Jim Starlin. Jim Starlin also created Adam Warlock. Now, I'm throwing out the name Adam Warlock because in the bonus scene, or the credit scene in Thor: The Dark World, you get to see the Collector. You get to see two of the Asgardians drop off the ether with the Collector. And for a brief moment, you see off to the side, there is a sort of a collector's sort of a tube where he keeps creatures and all of his stuff. And there's a big cocoon in there. And that is Adam Warlock. Adam Warlock is, his cocoon comes into play when he's like regenerating damage. That's how he restores himself. And that's one of the main things that ties a lot of these characters together is Jim Starlin, who is a legendary writer for Marvel Comics.
There was one of the stories I read today or the last couple of days about Guardians of the Galaxy is the rumor that what was that character's name again that was in the cocoon?
Adam Warlock.
That they may actually make him Peter Quill's father. Because they've already changed some of the story. They've already changed the background to a lot of stuff.
And that would make a bit of sense, at least, and kind of fits the pattern, like you're saying, for the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And if you have the Infinity Gems, which is essentially what's inside of these, inside of the Tesseract is one, inside of which is from Captain America, the first film, and the Avengers. The ether, which showed up prominently in Thor 2, The Dark World, and now this particular orb that had the gem inside of it in Guardians of the Galaxy. If you have the Infinity Gems, you have Adam Warlock. So I would put serious money on when they do Avengers 3 and they have Thanos be the villain, you're going to see Adam Warlock.
I was wondering about, because I just watched Thor: The Dark World, and I saw one of the creatures or one of the characters kind of burning like they did on Guardians of the Galaxy, like when they held that, the same effect. And I was wondering if that was, because I was kind of half in and half out, kind of paying attention, and I wasn't really following the story. So the ether, that's one of the Infinity Gems.
It's each of the each of the artifacts contains an infinity gem, and sort of the byproduct of the power that they hold is imbued into the object that they're inside of.
Okay, got it. And there's how many total?
Six.
Okay, and three have been revealed.
Correct.
All right. I wonder how many Marvel movies there's going to be between Guardians 1 and Guardians 2.
Well, unless Marvel changes their slate, essentially, we're not going to see that until at least 2018.
Yeah, there's going to be more than three movies. I was trying to do the math, trying to figure out if they're going to like slowly kind of unveil those throughout the next few movies or not. But I don't know.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting because, you know, Avengers 3, and if I could type, that would be way awesome. Avengers 3 is supposed to come out in
2015, right?
2021. Somewhere between 2018 and 2021.
Oh, Avengers 3. Okay, I thought you were saying Avengers 2.
Yeah, Avengers 3.
Okay, all right.
Which, you know, they keep talking about they're trying to build up to. Thanos is not going to be the villain in Avengers 2. We already know at this point that it's Ultron, which is, he's a pretty badass character. But they have the other three gems to get out there, and you really kind of need to build up a bit of the cosmic portion of the Marvel universe, I think, before you can bring in the Infinity Gems and have it make sense to people, and to see Thanos in all of his wonder, because he is... You only see him sitting in a throne. The amount of strength, speed, and his abilities, I mean, he's telekinetic, he can control energy to a certain degree. I mean, he's got a vast array of incredible powers. So he's kind of a big deal.
Okay, so I wanted your thoughts on the movie, Brad. We talked, Anessa and I gave our thoughts. What are your thoughts?
I enjoyed the film a lot. I wasn't swept up and swept away like a lot of people are. But I think part of it is the crowd. When Ines and I saw it, we saw it on July 31st at 10:30 or 10:45 showing. So people were expecting it to come out the next day, so people weren't really out looking for it. And so we got to see it, and there was just a few people in the audience.
Yeah, there might have been like 20 people max.
Yeah,
throughout the theater,
and that's not an exaggeration. I mean, I think it might be a little bit less than 20. I think 20 might be a tad generous, but close.
Probably, but 15 to 20, and that would be including us.
Yeah. So I think if you were to see that movie in a packed theater with everybody kind of oohing and aahing, I think that, you know, I would have probably come away with a little bit more. I think I oohed and aahed and clapped when I saw Star Trek V, and I don't really like that movie anymore. So, I mean, it really – you get caught up in the moment, and you really – I think it has more impact when you have a larger and more interactive and enthusiastic crowd kind of giving and sharing energy, as it were, sharing enthusiasm for the film that they're watching. That said it's done something that it really needed to for the Marvel Universe, and that is get it off of the ground. I mean, literally, get it off of the earth to do some of the things that they need to do with the characters that they have. They have to start taking things off world, off earth, and this was an important key step in making that happen. So I think that they did it well. I think that the one thing that they couldn't do is overdo it and put too much crap in there, too many effects, make it hokey, which could have easily been done with obscure characters as these are. So I think that James Gunn played it right. I think that he did a good job in that regard. Was I swept away in an emotional response of, this is the greatest frickin' thing I've ever seen in my life? No. But that said, it's a good movie. And I definitely want to see it again because there are a lot of things that – there's a lot of subtle things that are happening in the background that if you're a comic book fanboy like myself, you will notice more things the second time through.
You might want to – yeah, and Brad, you might want to read that list. I found a couple of lists online of all the little Easter eggs. It might help you out if you read that before you went back into the movie again so you can look for those things.
Yep.
I thought, and I've read this other places, about how this movie is kind of the way movies should be made. Like, they talk about how these superhero and comic book movies have gotten too serious. They're taking themselves way too seriously. And this movie had the perfect amount of tongue-in-cheek humor and action, and it had great story and characters that you could really get behind as well.
Yeah, they were all genuinely flawed. You know, I wouldn't necessarily call them anti-heroes, but they're not the people that you would expect to be heroic. But I think that the comedy and James Gunn, if you've seen any of his work like Slither and he worked with Troma Films, so he did a lot of work with them. Slither is the only movie that comes to mind right now. But he perfectly blends horror and comedy in that film. You know, you've got the alien, you've got the strange, but then he grounds it in a scene, in a moment, in a piece of dialogue that while you're being pummeled with the fantastic, you're grounded at the same time. And that's what this film kind of really needed to do to open the door to the cosmic realms of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
And, you know, this movie could have failed in so many different ways. I mean, because you had a talking raccoon. You had a character that could only say three words. You had, let's see, what else? It was in space, but that's not really a negative. That's a positive. I loved the fact that I was going to see a space movie again. It'd been so long since there was a really good, big, like, summer blockbuster space movie out, and it was so awesome.
The thing that I really liked and noticed about the space stuff is it felt, and we saw this in 2D. I want people to kind of keep that in mind. Even with it being in 2D, it felt like you were in space. The way things were shot, the way things were done, it felt big. When you were in space, they took the time to pull away so you could see that, you know, there's this little ship doing stuff in outer space. You got that sense of scale. I think he helped. Sometimes you see like a really crappy sci-fi film and everything's up close and you don't get the feeling of the vastness of space that you are in. And I think that James Gunn did a very good job of kind of playing that. You had to be up close in certain points, but he really did. He wasn't afraid to pull that camera back and really kind of give you the sense that, yeah, I am in outer space and this is vastly huge. And these ships that we're dealing with are vastly huge and really kind of allowing you the perception of the vastness of space, which I thought was wonderful. Absolutely wonderful.
One more point before we get out of here, because we do have to scoot here. And we could talk about Guardians of the Galaxy all day.
Forever.
But the music, I think, was another character in this film.
Absolutely.
The music, the use of pop songs from all the way from the early 60s to late 70s, I thought was brilliant. And I think that really brought more viewers in. I think it brought more people to the theater, and it was smart of them to use those in the trailer as well.
It definitely helped humanize the film, and it helped humanize Peter Quill. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, he's a human that's been kind of thrust into the world of the fantastic of space, but he's got this piece of magnetic media that is his anchor, his tie to his humanity. And at the point where, you know, he's put in jail and that guy is listening to his Walkman, he loses his mind. And you have that brief moment of, is he a bully? But you really, at a certain point, and he does it so well when he's in that scene, is you get the feeling of how absolutely important that tape is to him. It is everything to him. And I mean, he even goes so far as to go back and get his Walkman.
Well, it's
that big.
It's his only tie to his
life,
yeah,
that he had, and his mother, which is very, very big to him.
I loved three things I loved, maybe more than three. I loved his stereo aboard the Milano, his ship. I love the scene where he's teaching Gamora about music and how to dance. That was cool. And then did you happen to notice little Peter Quill's watch when he was going up, when he was being kind of immersed in the light of the spaceship? He was wearing, and I don't have mine on, but he was wearing the exact same watch that I usually wear, which is an Armatron. mine is not authentic. Mine is a what do you call it?
Knockoff?
Well, not a knockoff. It's an actual Armatron, but it wasn't made in the 1980s. It was just...
Okay. Gotcha. It's retro.
Yeah, exactly. All right. That's it. That's your Guardians of the Galaxy talk. I loved it. I really, it kind of brought me back to my childhood and going to the movies of the 1980s, really, for me. The fun movies.
Yeah, I was going to jump into something that would take a lot of time. So, no, it was good. It was a good movie. Absolutely.
All right. Leave us some feedback, galacticnetcasts@gmail.com. Tell us what you thought about the Guardians of the Galaxy, or use our voicemail number, 805-328-3966. Also, make sure that you subscribe to our podcast. We're on iTunes, Stitcher, or just go to galacticnetcasts.com/subscribe. We appreciate that. And before we go, final thoughts. Brad, you are first.
The soundtrack, the awesome mix, is available on iTunes, and it's available on Google Play Store. And I'm sure you can pick it up on Amazon. It's well worth getting. It's a nice history of music, and again, it's the one character of the movie that you can actually possess and listen to at any time. And I'm sure that when you listen to that, for me, it's gonna, because, you know, especially Dave and I kind of grew up with a lot of that music, and I'm sure Anessa has memories of it as well. You really should buy that. It's really good.
And I wonder if they're going to make available somewhere down the line an actual cassette tape of it, like, that you can buy with the label and everything. That would be pretty cool.
That would be cool.
Yeah.
And all the hipsters will flock because of one of the few cassette tapes being sold.
Yes.
Yep.
And look for Awesome 2 in Guardians of Galaxy number 2. That's going to be, I'm sure that will be the name of the tape then. Well, he played the first song off it, so.
He played the first song.
Yeah, there's got to be more. Okay. All right, Anessa, what's your final thought?
I'd like more water.
All right. Well, good thing that we're ending, so go get some water. Thanks for listening to The Alien Invasion, and we will talk to you guys next week.
My thoughts are so deep.
Leave your hailing frequencies open and scanners on full, because another Galactic Netcast will be approaching your coordinates soon. For more information, go to galacticnetcasts.com.